takes interpretation.
Switching over.
I'm on my fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fish.
Man, don't you love that sound? If that don't put you in a good mood, ain't nothing going to put you in a good mood. That's actually Elvin Bishop, Charlie Daniels playing the fiddle on that back in, I think it was 1971 that came out. Very, very minor hit. Was actually a bigger hit in Tokyo, believe it or not. And then the album was never re-released. But an awesome song, Elvin Bishop, and always makes me smile. I've been working off of that song since, 1986 was the first time we played that before giving a fishing thing. So, anyway, Fish and Frank's here. Got Fish and Frank in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and we got RJ, our producer over there, trying to make sure that we stay within the bounds of reason. Good luck with that one. Okay, anyway. Lots of stuff going on around the area, the harbor, the Gulf. I'm going to have to say the biggest thing is, you know, you hear fishing shows and everybody talks about, well, we're in transition. I mean, to the point where I didn't want to hear the word transition anymore every week. Oh, we're transitioning this, transitioning that. Well, this is one where it actually applies, because wintertime in Southwest Florida, the northeast winds blow the water away. We get shallower and shallower and shallower. I'm sure you guys have heard of stacking from a hurricane, where a hurricane blows the water up against shore, and then the tide tries to go out and can't, so it blows even more water in, and the water tries to get away and can't, and then gets even more water, and the water gets higher and higher and higher as the wind blows. Well, exactly the opposite thing happens down here around the Charlotte Harbor area along the intercoastal. The northeast winds push the water out of the harbor. And if it blows all day long and the tide tries to come in, can't get back in, blows out more, can't get back in, blows out more, 10-mile-an-hour wind can actually, if it blows all day from the northeast, will reduce the water level in Charlotte Harbor and the ICW by over 6 inches. And wintertime, we have about 6 inches less water than what we're going to have in about, what would you say, Robert, 2 months from now?
Yeah.
About a month, yeah. 2 months.
About right? 2 months. Usually April, you really start to see it change.
But now here's the tricky little part is that the wind are switching to the west and southwest. And that, as you would guess, is going to blow more water in. It's going to give us more water on the average. You're going to be seeing, instead of 6 inches less, 8 inches, 10 inches, a foot less, you're going to be seeing 6 inches, a foot, 2 foot more water. Now, what makes it so extreme around Charlotte Harbor is the passes. Down at the bottom, we've got Ponarasa at the end of Sanibel. We've got Redfish at the north end. We've got Captiva Pass. We've got Boca Pass, Little Gasparilla, Stump Pass, the Venice Inlet. And these little tiny passes, because they're not very big, they control all the water coming in and out of Charlotte Harbor and the intercoastal. So as the water comes in through these passes and that wind's blowing it in, even when the tide tries to get out, it's kind of like if you have a slope driveway and you got a garden hose. You put your thumb over the garden hose and you keep spraying that water up the driveway. You stop spraying and all that water floods right out. Well, same thing. The wind's going to keep blowing it in, puts it under pressure. Then that water's trying to get out through that little pass. Well, all the surface water's still coming in. So only a little bit of water in the bottom gets out. So we're going to get more and more water. Great news is it changes the fishing. It doesn't, it in some ways, I'm going to say, makes it harder.
Yeah.
It really does.
It makes it a lot harder.
Because in the wintertime, we got a lot less water. So you look out over the flats and stuff, and if there's no water there, there's no fish. if there's water there, there's probably fish there.
Right.
Because it's very, okay, here's a big puddle of water. You got 2 foot, 3 foot of water there. And then over here, it's 4 inches of water on the flat. Well, there's no fish there. You can actually see that. But once that water comes up, there's water all over the whole flat. So where are the fish going to be?
Well, it depends on the fish. I mean, some of them go hundreds of yards up underneath those mangroves.
I don't know about hundreds of yards. Maybe hundreds of inches.
No, think about it. You got some of those mangroves are cut off, like on the west wall. Some of those creeks go all the way over to Gulf Cove, but okay. Some of them are probably cut off.
What you're saying is that when the water comes way up, those creeks fill up with a lot more water, but there's mangroves overhanging the top of them. It's not... You can't even get a boat up in there.
No.
So
no,
what's going to happen is they're going to go up in those little creeks and get to places they couldn't get to all winter.
Absolutely.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm thinking hundreds of yards up the mangrove. Mangroves are like 6 feet of branches, maybe. And I'm going, how do you get hundreds of yards up something that's only 6 feet wide?
Well, technically, those are like a mangrove forest over there on the west wall.
Okay, and that's a mangrove forest, and that would be, okay, you got dirt and then water out in front of there. There's not water up underneath all those mangroves. That's mostly dirt.
Quite a ways through there, there's a lot of mud.
Well, a lot of mud, like, yeah, but not a lot of water.
Because they can't grow on just 100% dry land. They have to have wet feet at some point.
Well, but it's a lot after the last thousands of years of the leaves falling down. It's pretty much just muck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't say but I don't think there's like water, might be a little pocket here and a little pocket there, but I don't think there's actual fish habitat back there. I think critter habitat I'll go along with, but not fish habitat. I've walked back in a lot of those mangroves.
Right.
You find a lot of cool stuff wading along the shorelines. Like there's the actual water depth markers still in existence, and what you're going to see out there. And if you see somebody ever try and take one, beat them within an inch of their life and leave them lay there. They're back when prior to 1950, the water was used for navigation. And to the point where that's barges that took cattle and phosphate, and barges were used for everything because you could put a massive amount of stuff on it and still move it. There was no good roads. There wasn't even really a railroad that much. And so the water was used to haul goods and services. And so they actually needed to know. But there's actual markers out there. It's a little like concrete and rock with a brass plate on the top. And there's one on the west side and one on the east side. And I know where they are, but I won't tell you. But if you do happen to see them, it's really cool. Get a picture and... it's pretty awesome to see that. And it tells you that was the average water depth at that point.
That's pretty cool.
And I mean, they used to do all that with like a sextant and, just a glass, a transit thing with a bubble on it. You know, they didn't have computers or technology to do anything.
Right, just as simple as a rope and a weight and count the feet.
It was pretty awesome, but they're there and they're still in place, and it's really cool to see them. So anyway, getting on to the fishing, I guess at this time of year we have to talk about sheephead.
Yeah, sheephead have been the number one thing going right now, both inshore and near shore. Alligator Creek Reef these last couple weeks have been on fire, but everybody's been fishing them, so it's been a little trickier. You got to move around a lot to find the little patch where they're moving to. Plus, they're eating a lot. So they do move around on those little rubble piles out there where you'll find one rubble pile has a lot of sheep's head on it and another rubble pile might only have a couple on it.
Well, one of the things about the Alligator Creek Reef that's... if you've been here a while, they tore down... We have bridges between Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda. The ones that are there now were not the ones that were there when I moved here. The ones that... It was pretty awesome. It was a 2-lane bridge, you know, the old concrete, big side guards on them, well, all out of concrete, and they had the curved bottoms on it. And those were the ones they would build them up, and they'd make these curves out of block, and then they'd fill it all with dirt and rock, and then put the roadway on top of it. and the same as like what you would see in the Keys, but there was a drawbridge in the middle. And the problem with that drawbridge was when they blew a fuse, they would drive to Fort Myers because there was no place to get them in Port Charlotte or Punta Gorda. They would drive down to Fort Myers and buy two fuses and come back. Put the fuse in, and then the drawbridge would work. Car traffic would all go. But when they blew the second one, they would have to drive back down to Fort Myers and buy two more. They never bothered to keep. They would drive down, get two, and when those two were blown, then they would drive down again. They didn't, okay, we got the one in, and somebody go down and pick up an extra and keep one or two extras. No, no. If you were from Punta Gorda, you drove over to Port Charlotte, maybe you'd come back, maybe you couldn't. And there was a Howard Johnson's there at the base of the bridge, I think where the four something is now. And you would see there, you'd be driving up, you'd see the bridge standing up, and no boats, okay. It's stuck again. You'd pull into Howard Johnson's, go have an ice cream sundae, hang out, talk for a while. And then all of a sudden the bridge would go down and everybody go back out to their cars and continue on their way. If you didn't want to do that, you had to drive all the way out to 761, out 17761, and come back in on Kings Highway because that was the closest bridge.
Right, because 75 wasn't there.
There was
yet.
No I-75. Yeah.
Right.
And so,
wow.
Yeah, it was a different way to live. But the weird part about it is, if it happened now, I think everybody would be screaming and hollering and stomping their feet. And back then, you know. You'd go to Howard Johnson's, use the payphone to call whoever you were coming with, say, oh, I'm stuck either in Port Charlotte or Punta Gorda. But nobody ever, I mean, people get a little, they'd be annoyed with it, but I don't remember anybody getting mad. They'd relax, have ice cream, hang out. It was just different attitude.
Well, the pace was a lot slower then, too. You weren't in a great hurry, unless you're going to have a baby, you weren't in a great hurry to go anywhere. You were just going, you know, and if you got there, and also, this is paradise.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, if you can hang out on the beach or on the Peace River and have an ice cream sundae, I mean, why wouldn't you, you know?
People would just sit along the bridge, they'd get out of their car, sit up on the bridge, and look around and just enjoy the day.
Well, and everybody had fishing poles in their cars, right? So,
well, there's quite a few of them.
Yeah?
Quite a few of them. But I was still, I was an iron worker back then. I hadn't even started working at the bait shop at that point. So it was different, but a lot of fun. But the point is about that bridge, and we were just talking about people who ramble on the radio shows and don't.
Yeah, where are we going
point.
With all this, guys?
Yeah, how's that topic working out?
Yeah. Okay.
Are there fish involved?
Isn't it funny when you get an old guy at a microphone, he just got to ramble into these old memories. But when they knocked down that bridge, they took that out to form that reef. Well, it's 1 mile from one north to south. And it runs pretty much due north and south. It's a great way to test your compass. You know, start at one pile and go to the other one. Then they started at the north end and came out about a third of the way. Then went to the south end and came out about a third of the way. And then they ran out of material. And so there's almost nothing in the middle except a little bit of scattered stuff here and there. Then Rich Novak, the Sea Grant agent years ago, got a grant, and they came down and they made a bunch of these giant reef balls. They're like 4 feet tall or 5 feet tall. They took clusters of three of those and put them in the water all along the edge of that, from the north end to the south end. Every 30 feet, there is a grouping of three reef balls on the east side and the west side of the reef. So usually if you get snagged, you're in the middle, you caught one of those reef balls. A lot of anchors down there.
A whole lot of anchors.
You got to kind of, when you pull up, I look from the one to the other, kind of figure out what that is. I have extra anchor lines, so I go off the side, drop my anchor, my normal anchor line, and then I'll tie on some extra so that I can get actually over the reef itself. First thing I do when I go to fish there is I put out a fishing pole with a bobber on it. And I put the tip of the water in the rod, and then I watch for which way the bobber's going. And that tells me the direction of the water there. Because you think you know which way it's going, but not really. A bobber with a line, it'll point the direction the current's going. So I can pull my anchor up, go around, and actually get up current of where I want to fish, rather than trying to fish where the bait's been coming at me. I want to be able to throw a little bit of chum in the water. I like a mixed variety of chum. I dice up some old shrimp. I save all the frozen shrimp I have. and the red ones, the good ones, and I dice those up with a knife into little tiny eighth-inch, quarter-inch pieces, toss them out behind the boat right where I'm going to fish. I don't want them big enough to feed the fish, but I want them inch big enough to create smell. I make sure I get the heads all chopped up in there, too. And I toss those out. Well, if the tide's coming at me, it's all going under my boat. I want it going away from me so it goes out to where my fishing lines are.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize how beneficial chumming can be because a lot of times they just see it drifting away from the boat, you know, and they don't think it's going to really work for a reef fish, whether it's snapper or sheep's head. They always associate chumming with for shark fishing, nothing else.
Yeah, but it's only like 12 or 14 feet deep there. So if the current's moving really fast, I literally drop it right behind the boat. If the current's moving a little slower, I might have to actually pitch it out to get it to go where my bait is. But if I'm fishing with shrimp, and I've got shrimp down there for the sheephead, the mangrove snappers and all that, I don't want to chum with fish or crabs. If you're walking down the street, you're going along, and all of a sudden you smell somebody cooking a steak on a grill, does that make you want a hot dog?
No, not at all.
Why not? The people chum with fish and then fish with shrimp. I don't get that. They come there looking for fish. So if you're going to chum with it, fish with it.
I agree to a certain extent there, but like what would be the difference with the ground up chum?
Well, it's got a little bit of everything in it.
Okay.
When they grind up that chum, there's some shrimp, there's some crab, there's some fish. It's whatever they happen to get. And you're
getting a lot of bycatch.
And you're getting more or less a smell thing. You're not actually putting out little tiny pieces of something.
Right.
It's ground up so much, it's just an overall smell. But when I'm using the chum bags, I have chunks of fish out as well as shrimp. That right. way I know what's going to happen. Because like I say, I've been fishing with shrimp, and I could see all the fish trying to throw shrimp at them. They didn't want them. Put a piece of fish on, boom, they eat it. And I've had it the other way, too, where throwing pieces of fish out into the chum slick, and they don't want it. I put a shrimp on, and boom, they hit it. I don't think you ever really know what they grind up into that chum.
Yeah, I have no idea. I think most of it is bycatch.
All right. So anyway, at the Alligator Creek Reef, best to chum a little bit. Stay just off the reef and cast your baits out. You're going to be on the bottom, and you're going to be snapperized, we call it. There's a gazillion little 3 to 6 inch mangrove snappers down there that are going to pick apart anything you get to the bottom. So great idea is they're going to hit shrimp better. So I put a piece of squid on the hook first. Then I'll either put a piece of frozen shrimp or live shrimp on, toss it down, and that way when the bait thieves get to it, they try for the squid, boom, at least you can catch them and, you know, get something out of the ordeal.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Now, a lot of mangrove snappers down there. It's an amazing array of fish. What else is at the Alligator Creek Reef right now? I'd say possible cobia, possible trout.
Possible cobia, possible trout. Definitely there's a slim possibility of a Spanish mackerel or two showing up because they are starting to show up some other places. That would be about it, to be honest with you. Because, I mean, I haven't heard of much else. Even the little baby gag grouper and jewfish, I haven't heard much about lately over there. And that's right. Usually a pretty
tell
good
me
spot.
About, tell me about bonnethead sharks. Let's get into shovel nose sharks, the hammerhead, bonnet sharks.
Yeah, bonnethead sharks okay. are perfect. Honestly, right now, from what I've been reading.
No, don't be honest with me. Lie to me, Robert. That's what I really want.
what I've been reading a little bit is that they are starting to go into a little bit of a spawning aggregate out there and talking to Greg, you know, because some guys have been seeing some pretty good-sized schools, including Morris saw a real big school, but some of these guys are seeing an average of anywhere from 10 to 25 bonnetheads swimming around in a small group on the flat and courting each other, I guess, chasing each other around in some ways and even...
So we're talking about shark porn here now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much. The good news is that unlike some species of fish, when that's going on, they aren't interested in eating. These guys are still feeding, so you stand a good chance of catching a couple.
Well, I don't know. Back in the 70s, I can remember going to the club and then go out.
No more stories. Let's stay on topic.
They go for breakfast somewhere. Why is it so unusual?
I don't know.
They got to be the young ones. Us old ones. You know.
Give me dinner,
and I want to go to sleep. You can forget the rest of this stuff. Nice. I just want to nap after, you know, once I eat. So these sharks are actually out there making, the producer's going, I don't know what's going on here. Okay. Bonnet sharks, they're in full spawn mode. They're going to be giving birth probably around May, June, I would guess.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of your sharks give birth around there, April, May, and even early June. And that just coincides with all the food sources, you know, all the different bait fish coming close. But they're all on the intercoastal, behind Devilfish, up to like Sandfly, Widden Bay area, and then a lot behind Boca Grande.
You heard anything up by Venice from sharks? Bonnets?
Not too much in the bonnets. I've heard of a few along the intercoastal, but most of them have been.
How about down by Sanibel or
Sanibel, yes.
Estero?
Sanibel, yes. I heard of some by Estero, but that was over 2 weeks ago since I got a good report from there.
But pretty broad spread up and down the coast.
Yeah.
The cool thing about these hammerhead, or they're hammerhead, they're shovel nose, they're bonnet sharks, depends on which name you want to look them up under, but they eat shrimp, primary diet.
Yeah, shrimp and crabs are their primary food
source.
That's
why I don't like to eat them. They got more of that shellfish taste to them. I prefer the black tips, the Atlantic sharp nose, ones like that, because they're pretty much on a straight fish diet.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It just changes the taste of the meat just a tiny bit.
Well, and I can see that because, I mean, you got a higher iodine content amongst shellfish than you do the baitfish. So that's probably what it is.
That little bitter aftertaste that people love on the shrimp that I'm not that crazy about. So
no, I don't like them. I catch too many of them a day.
Yeah. But now, my buddy, that's all he wants to eat is bonnet sharks. He don't like the hammerheads or the black tips or the sharp nose. He don't like them at all. He likes the bonnets. He says they're so much better eating. He loves them.
Yeah, but ask him when he goes to a restaurant, does he order fish or does he usually order like scallops or shrimp or crab or something like that more than he orders the fish?
Yeah, people really like scallops and clams and lobster and all that are going to really love bonnet sharks.
Right. That's what I found.
If you're a bigger lobster eater, like I'm not crazy about lobster. It's okay, but it's nothing I want. But my friends who eat a lot of lobster, they love eating the bonnet sharks.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed.
That's a good point. Never thought about it that way.
And the greatest part about these sharks is that they're fun-sized sharks. You don't need jaws, fishing reels.
No, you want as light as tackle as possible. Yeah. Trout rods.
Trout rods. I mean,
I like catching them on crappie rods.
Well, you know what you're doing, but for just the average angler going out there, you don't need any extravagant tackle. Literally,
2,500 reel or 3,000
Your bass tackle will work just fine.
Actually, bass tackle might even be heavy for a 6 to 12 spinning rod.
If they've got it.
Yeah.
You know, which is what most people do, because a lot of people think shark fishing, they need all these big rods, and you've probably already got the rod, which is a bass rod.
Yeah, bass rod will definitely do it. I'm sticking to the crappie rod. So.
Sure.
All right. You know, you can do whatever you want to, Robert. I'm not going to...
Keeping it simple.
All right. Now, Boca Grande, all the passes, they seem to be bunching up there. Along the ICW, K-Pays, and all the way up and out. Now, as long as we're right out there, what's going on right outside in the Gulf? You know, 3 miles out, 7 miles out. What's going on out there?
Spanish mackerel. Spanish mackerel are starting to show back up.
I thought we put up a wall. How'd they get through that? Oh, we didn't put the wall up yet.
They dug under it.
Oh, they dug under the wall. Okay. The Spanish are getting under the wall. Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's that invisible fence out there.
That was your politically correct minute on the Fish and Frank show.
Right.
I don't know. Wow. People are weird. All right.
You think?
Let's see.
Wow.
I don't know. To me, it's all funny. To everybody else, they get their panties all in a wad about it. I don't know.
Nah.
All right. Anyway, a lot of Spanish coming in.
Yeah, there's
And these are the great Spanish. These are the ones we like.
Really?
They're all killing. Most of them are good, but at least some of them, you know. Hey, all I'm saying is I like these Spanish, too.
Can't have that.
Oh, I can't have that. God darn. See, I told you, I'm off my game today.
Yeah, big time. The water temperature has come up a lot. So the glass minnows, some small white bait and thread fins, real small stuff, have started to move in closer to shore. And I think that's what's driving these Spanish mackerel back in. And I think some of them actually started to move back up from down south. Because, I mean, I don't know how these fish have been, you know, it's been void of Spanish mackerel out there, except for you hear of one here and one there randomly, but all of a sudden getting quite a few reports. People are seeing them, people are catching them, you know, having a good time with it.
Yeah, I gotcha. I was going to make a joke about Bart, but I can't get there.
No.
I couldn't help it. Oh, well.
But just go out there and look around for some birds diving. Look for any bait on the surface, and you can either slow troll around them with a silver spoon or cast a silver spoon or a gotcha into those schools of bait fish, and there's a very good chance of it. And even a couple guys have caught a couple of nice-sized bluefish as incidental bycatch. I've heard of 2 6- to 8-pound fish, bluefish mixed in with them.
Okay. Let's see. The southwest wind's going to make it. It takes less wind to make bigger waves coming out of the southwest. If it's blowing out of the northeast, it's coming off land and it takes longer to build up these big waves. But when that wind's coming out of the southwest, it gets much lumpier by shore with a lot less wind.
Yeah, because there's nothing to block its way, so it just builds.
It's been building waves for hundreds of miles out, where if you have a northeast wind, the first mile doesn't even have ripple on it because it's being blocked by land, you know, and then it gets a little bit more. By the time you get out, you know, 30 miles, you've got some pretty good waves.
Yeah.
But right off the get-go with a southwest wind, you can see some real bumpy stuff in the Gulf. So watch going through the passes, going out. Really make sure that, you know, your boat's capable, because it's going to say 5 to 10, but if it's blowing 10 out of the southwest, it can actually get pretty bumpy out there. So
yeah, you get those opposing wind and tides out there sometimes. It's a serious washing machine.
Yeah, if you get an outgoing tide and an incoming wind, it can get pretty bumpy. So just pay attention when you're on your way out. Now, keep in mind, this is the time of year, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You better be where you want to be. From 2 to 4 o'clock, the land is getting, we're back up in the mid and high 80s, pushing 90 degrees a lot of days, so the ground heats up very quickly. As that ground heats up, the hot ground sends that heat up. As that air starts rising up, it's got to pull other air in to replace it, so it pulls the air from across the surface of the water, creating a sea breeze. So between 2 and 4 o'clock, those winds are going to double or triple. If it's blowing 5 to 10, it's going to be 15 to 20 easy. And you got 2 hours where it's going to be rough and bumpy. And you either want to be where you're going before 2 o'clock and hang out till after 4. Or if you haven't made the move before 2, just plan on staying there until after 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock, that wind's going to just back right off. It's going to be nice and simple. You're going to be able to get wherever you want to go without getting all beat up and lumpy. But a lot of people, when that wind picks up at 2 o'clock, they don't understand what's going on. Oh, man, I got to get back. It's getting bad out here. So they get all bumped up and bang their boats around and get all soaking wet trying to get back in. And that's okay if you want to do it. But you can also just wait till 4 o'clock and come back, and it'll be nice and calm again.
You're already late for dinner anyway. She's already going to yell at you.
Yeah, she's
already
going to yell at you.
Take your time and be safe, and why burn up more gas trying to do it?
All right. Novak Trembley, Mary's. The power pole seems to be the one getting the most attention lately, and it's not. The power pole reef is not just power poles, by the way. There is a barge and a crane there, as well as a lot of concrete pipe dump there. Three different dump zones on what they call the power pole reef. So you can fish the barge and the crane, the power pole pile, or the concrete pipe piles. And it's pretty cool out there at the power pole. A lot of different fish going on. Possible permit, but I doubt it. But if they're going to be around anywhere, they seem to like that one a lot for that. I think because they can go between the different piles of stuff. And watching for cobia right now. Cobia is really starting to come on. What's your take on the cobia, Robert?
Yeah, I'm kind of getting the same thing you are. There's been people starting to talk about them and seeing them a little bit more and of a little bit better size. you know, and always offshore, they're going to show up first as far as better quality fish before they move inside. And with this big time rise in water temperature, it wouldn't surprise me that they're
now,
just
more
active.
Now, did we get a volcano out in the Gulf or something?
I have no idea.
Was there an earthquake and lava flow I'm unaware of?
Nope. Nope. It's just...
How did the water come up 11 degrees in 10 days?
Because it's been 88, 87. I mean, in nighttime lows have only been in the high 60s.
And you know, the other thing
and
is...
And it's clear
been,
skies, so it's been
that's
cranking.
That's the biggie. The clear skies, really, that solar radiation absorbs into that water, and the temperature rises up.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm just surprised how rapidly it went up. I mean, I'm expecting a degree or two every few days.
I don't know if I've ever seen a degree a day in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not like
and
that.
This is just a touch over 1 degree a day, and that's absolutely unheard of. So, the
and
fish
that was
being,
what I read. Somebody told me this morning that Naples Pier was 78.9 yesterday.
Yeah, but that's pure shallow water. That
right.
That's going to change much, much faster than even surface temps out a mile or two.
Absolutely.
You get a lot of reflected radiation from the bottom.
Right.
The
shallow flats here, same way.
Well, but there's a lot of darker bottom than what there used to be. And the white sand bottom would reflect the sunlight back up and not trap it into the water. But so much brown bottoms, dark stuff and all that on the bottom traps that radiation and puts it right into the water. Doesn't reflect it back out.
Gotcha.
So that's one of the big things there. Trout moving in 4 to 6 feet of water. Have you heard any trout up in Lemon Bay or anything going on up there?
Yeah, a little bit. Man, most of it's been north of the Tom Adams Bridge with some fish around the Tom Adams Bridge. Some of the sheep's head fishermen that are fishing around the pilings there at the bridge have been catching a few trout out in that deeper water.
I like the fishing around there, and I go over towards Stump Pass down towards Ski Alley along those docks, really big sheephead.
There's been some sheephead right there along the beach and that new little jetty or tongue or whatever they call it, groin. That's what they call it. That's the word.
Groin?
Yeah, they call it a groin because it's not really a true jetty, which is dumb. But
yeah, why wouldn't you just build one?
I don't
get why they... built one that didn't come.
It lasted a month anyway. Hurricane Irma pretty much destroyed that whole flow through there.
If it would have been up 4 or 5 feet out of the water, it would have stood a chance.
Build a real jetty, just like you said.
You know, keep building it up. I mean, it's going to sink a little bit into the sand.
I mean, Sharkies has fallen into the water how many different times in the last 20 years with it breaking apart from storms, and yet the jetty, the pass itself, is still there. That one works. Why don't they just copy that one?
Yeah.
I mean, the pier can't handle the weather, but their rock jetty does up there in Venice. Why can't they do that at Stump Pass? Pretty easy.
I don't get why when the government goes to do something, they go, well, this worked really well. Let's do something else. Or the only time they copy something is when it didn't work. Oh, that didn't work there. Let's do it again here.
I have a theory.
Yes.
Lowest bidder.
A lot of it has to do with the lowest bidder stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have never seen... Why would anybody wanting contracts... And I literally gave up a government contract because I said, I'm not bidding on it. You know my work. You know I'm going to treat you fair. Either hire me or don't. And they said, well, we can get this guy to do it for that. I said, good luck with it. Have a good time. Because if you're bidding that low... How do you get the resources?
Yeah, no, that's the problem. And then, you know, of course, prices on materials are always going up, and prices on the gasoline or the diesel to get it there is always going up. So the lowest bidder usually gets screwed anyway.
But
the whole world gets screwed because the product doesn't
last. Here's what the problem with that lowest bidder thing is that they have usually in their contract, if the cost of this goes up, they can get more. So we end up paying for the premium we end up paying a subpar contractor premium prices because the U.S. government couldn't write a decent contract if it tried. You know, literally, this is your bid. Do it. If you can't do it, fine. You're not getting paid. Bring the next guy in. But they don't do that. Back into fishing. And it kind of goes along with some of our reel companies on a really Austrian left turn segue there. We find so many of the reel companies that produce a bad reel, and everybody does it. All the reel companies will every once in a while turn out a reel that's just no good.
Right.
And the one thing they won't do is re-engineer it to fix the problem. See, 90% of the reel, we see it in Daiwa quite often. They bring out a reel, and it'll cast great, and, I mean, just outcast everything else. I forget what that gold one they had a number of years ago was. The thing would fall apart. The metals together didn't, as soon as you put them in salt water, just corroded up, and they made noise, and they wouldn't work. But when they were new, boy, they outcasted everything.
Yeah, they were amazing.
But instead of re-engineering it, they go, oh, well, they run it for a few years and hope people won't send too many of them back, and then bring out a new reel when they had an unbelievably good reel with defects. And this is where we got in with Penn. They had a decent reel that had problems, the original Battle.
Yep.
And they re-engineered it. Now, that was impressive. And then...
not only did they re-engineer it, but they actually sent you, like, spare parts to say, if they have a problem with this, in between now and when we get this fixed.
Well, that was the handles. Right. We were just getting ready to call them and say, hey, there's a problem with the handles, because the handles were falling off. You could have been reeling it in, and all of a sudden the end of the handle would be in your hand.
Yeah,
and we're getting ready to call them and say, hey, we got about a half a dozen handles we've had to replace. We get this big box of handles in the mail going, replace handles anytime somebody needs them because there's a problem.
Yep.
And the first piece, they had a part that wasn't good, so they re-engineered that piece, fixed it. And then the last thing they could never fix was the paint coming off on about, I'd say not quite half of them. The reels still worked good, but all the paint came off.
Right.
So they finally ended up having to put a whole new body on it, infused colors, and the paint couldn't come off because it's actually part of the body. So that was the one thing I think that attracted me most at the beginning to Penn, was their willingness to say, nope, we messed that up. It's not right. This right. has got a problem. And in my lifetime in the tackle business, it's the only time I've ever heard a real company admit that they have a problem. They made it wrong. It's got to be fixed.
Yeah.
And they fixed three different things, and now they're under one. We got a couple random problems with them.
Sure.
But
nobody can make anything perfect, period. Not when you're mass producing anything. I don't care where you make it at.
We're trying to make money off it. Penn's trying to make money off it. The shipping people are making money off it. The people, the manufacturing plant's trying to make... I mean, you think the manufacturing plant, the people getting the materials, all the stuff that goes into that, and for it to sell at $100 is actually... pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So, anybody notice it's foggy in the morning?
Yeah. Yeah, especially this morning. It took a little bit for it to fall to the ground because it was a high fog. But when it dropped really big time.
What was weird, the other morning you were doing a talk at Bernstor Anglers.
Oh, yeah.
And it hit out at my place, and I called you. There was no fog at the store. I live over in Harbor Heights, and... called Robert at the store. There was no fog there. And then by the time you got out to on Bernstor Road to do the talk, there was that space between my teeth whistles every once in a while. I don't know how I hit that just right to do that. I couldn't whistle if I tried. But the fog will hit in different places. One thing that we ask people not to do when you're leaving the dock is put your boat on plane following a GPS line. Yes. If, in a perfect world, if you get up on plane and you follow your GPS line, you will end up where you want to go. Because with the line, you're not going to run into a mark or anything else. But how do you know somebody else isn't running a GPS line on plane coming broadside to you or head-on with you? If you're going to go out in the fog, no problem going out and idling. And just idling along, following your GPS line. But that allow you to hear if another boat's coming or whatever. But if you're on plane, they're on plane, accident time. We don't want that. So if it's foggy, slow down, idle the boat, figure out where you're going. And I get guys that say, well, I put the wind off my left cheek. All right, that's good until the boat's running. Let's say you're idling at 6 miles an hour. The breeze is now coming off the whole of your face. It's not, if you're in a sailboat or a rowboat, you could say, okay, I'm going to put the breeze in my left cheek and just keep going with that because you're not interfering with the wind. But the artificial movement of an outboard eliminates that. And, okay, the waves are hitting the right side of my boat, so I'm going to go on and just keep the waves on the right side of the boat. Chances are you'll end up where you started, if you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
So.
Well, not only that, but, I mean, just going too fast, you can't hear for other situations going on around you. Like you said, you know, another boat could be flying along, and if you're above idle speed, basically, you've eliminated all those noises that could help potentially protect you from getting run over by someone else being a knucklehead.
Yeah, because it's, I've seen too many very, very close quarters out there. Just bringing it up on the safety side. Now, if you're going right around the dock, throwing a topwater in that fog is pretty awesome.
Oh,
love
yeah.
throwing a topwater in the fog. I go out in the mornings, and if I'm around the docks or, like, say, Ponce Park or Port Charlotte Beach right next to the boat ramp all the way around up there, Venice up around the jetties, if you want to be safe, take out a topwater, get off to the side of the canal somewhere, take out a topwater lure and start throwing it. Doing a topwater in the fog is spectacular.
Yeah, I haven't done that in many, many, many years.
Started doing it in freshwater, ended up loving to do it in saltwater.
That was the first time I ever got to do it was in freshwater, and it was just neat. But it's been, I'll bet you it's been probably 15 years since I've gotten to fish in the fog like that with topwaters.
It's not something a lot of us think about doing. But we get out there, and we've got this fog. It's hard to get around anywhere. And the neat part about the fog is the fish aren't really going to see you standing there in a boat or on the dock. It's foggy. They have a hard time making anything out. And it's usually very, very calm. So you can throw that top water, get great sound, great action, and do a lot of great catching. And that's the one thing I love about throwing top waters in the fog is how much catching you can do. I'll use a jitterbug, continuous reeling lure. It's not a popper. Jitterbug is made to be slowly reeled in. And it's got to get that blip, 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 blip noise going. Little bubbles behind it. You won't be able to see that because of the fog. And all you hear is this big baloosh. Fish grabs it, goes down. Zara Spook, Skitter Walks, Top Pups, anything along the surface. Next time you're going out in that foggy morning, just kind of get your boat right there and start casting around the dock. You'd be surprised how many fish are going to be there. And they love hitting topwaters in the fog. It's absolutely amazing. I would have, you know, without having done it, it's not something I would have thought about. What do you think, what other lures would work good in the fog first morning? That's put you on the spot, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, honestly, I'd probably do something with some kind of noise to it or good scent. You know, because, I mean,
I think paddle tail shad would be fine.
Yeah, I mean, something with some good vibration, noise. You know, I'd want something that's going to thump pretty good, so paddle tail would work pretty good, but I like the idea of the topwater more, so that intrigues me more.
You ever bothered to fish in the fog, RJ?
I've done it in freshwater. Never did it in saltwater.
It's just, the reason I brought it up is we have so many foggy mornings this time of year, and literally most people, they always get so involved in where they're going to go fishing, they forget they are where they are at the moment. You're right there. Take out a topwater. Have some fun. Being, living in the moment, you know, so to speak, rather than worrying about where I'm going.
You know, fishing is supposed to be about, you know, unless you're subsistence fishing, fishing is supposed to be about fun, enjoyment, relaxation, meditation, excitement, all those words kind of jammed together. It's not about getting in the boat and driving for 4 hours, you know, or ending up on a sandbar because you're in the fog and you don't know where you're going.
But I really enjoy fishing in the fog. Something I started young and kept through. I was doing it the other morning. I was downstairs throwing topwater in the canal. Those jacks had gone by. And usually what happens when the jacks come through, they get you all excited. You go, you get the pole rigged up, you walk down there, and
gone.
But you throw anyway because, well, maybe they'll come back. Maybe they're just right up there. And so you throw this way, you throw that way, you work it, and you don't catch anything. But it's hard not to.
I know.
Because the canal just exploded all over the place. Now I have a rod with a lure on it. It's tied there. It leans up against the post. So all you do is, on my way to the canal, it's right there where I can just grab it, go, and I've caught a few fish doing that recently. What was surprised me is mullet acting like jacks the other night.
Really?
Yeah. Somebody turned down the headlights from a vehicle, one of the neighbors, hit the water, and I thought it was jacks, and they blew up the whole canal. And it, I went down there, no jacks, millions of mullet.
Were they a good size mullet?
Yeah, and they spooked, and all you heard was papoosh, 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 papoosh. But there were so many of them scaring the next one. The ones that got scared, scared the ones next to them, which scared the ones next to them. And you could literally see the chain reaction of fish explosions. And it was literally the ones getting freaked out, which freaked out the ones next to them. And it just kept going down the canal. And they were all mullet.
Don't they call that the wave?
Yeah, the wave. It's like the people in a football thing raising their arms. That's it. I'd never seen that before.
That's
where
pretty wild.
The headlights spooked one group, and then it just went on, down, 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 all the way down the line.
Nice.
And I was up on the back porch, so I came down, went down to the canal. I started shining light in there to see, and I could see the fish going by. There was no jacks. It was just mullet, and it had to be one bunch scaring the next bunch.
Wow.
Bunch of scaredy cats. Okay. navigating in a fog, southwest winds. Southwest winds are going to bring on much better fishing on the west side of the harbor because the east side is going to be in the teeth of the winds. The west side is going to be protected. The water level comes up, so you got 6 to 10 inches more water on the west side with a southwest wind minimum, and you're out of the wind. So it makes that fishing the west side that much better. The west side's a Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, the west wall in the harbor. You're going to be able to get out inside of Gaspereau Island much more efficiently. If you're going to get down on the insides of Captiva Pass, those docks just up to the north, makes them even better fishing because you're on the lee of the wind instead of the teeth of the wind, and it actually increases the fishing in all those areas. Do you think it does much in the intercoastal? Like, say, between Placida and Venice?
I think it does a little bit. I mean, it can change, you know, the fish pattern itself because it pushes bait up with the wind, you know, because sometimes that wind-driven shoreline will actually hold fish.
Yeah, pushing the bait up into the ICW. I wonder if that's helping push bait up into the harbor. We've seen a tremendous rise in glass minnows in the harbor here over the last couple of weeks. We're hearing stories about Spanish mackerel, bluefish, ladyfish, trout, pompano, jacks, all these fish in harbor proper and along the ICWs.
Yeah, the wind definitely pushes them because they're not that strong of swimmers. You know, they can hold their own to a little bit, but that's why they like more of the open Gulf because, you know, a little less current for the most part up closer to the surface. And you get the winds and they get caught in some of that stuff and get pushed in. There's no doubt. I mean, it even works the same way on freshwater lakes. You get a lot of wind-driven, you know, a lot of fish get excited along the wind-driven shoreline because it's not even just the bait fish, but it stirs up the little worms, the little crabs, the little shrimp. That splashing action is beating up against those mangrove roots, which is knocking crabs off, even lizards, you know. So I think sometimes fishing those shorelines like that, as much as it is a drag to fish in the teeth of the wind, sometimes those can be pretty productive spots.
Well, I got a call from Mr. Robert. Mr. Robert, you know, I listen to your show all the time. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I'd like to know if I'm heading down to the pier this way, what y'all figured best bait here for me to use at that pier over there?
What pier?
Well, the pier I'm going to.
Oh, okay. Shrimp.
Okay, and why shrimp?
Because it's the bottom of the food chain. You really can't go wrong with shrimp here this time of year. Any time during the whole year. I mean, every fish here will eat shrimp at some point. Now, I mean, I've gone mangrove snapper fishing at El Jobin, standing on the pier, literally using a little number one hook, small split shot because the current wasn't moving hard, fishing around those pilings, and hook a 100-pound tarpon on it. I mean, he ate a shrimp the size of my pinky. You know, it happens. So the fish will eat shrimp at some point or another, so you really can't go wrong with it.
But now we're going to be getting into that period where the water's going to be between 70 and 80 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the time when whitebait really shines.
Yeah, but
you're going to catch more fish with white bait or thread fins, some type of shiny bait fish, be it silver jennies, white bait, whatever.
I think we're still too early for that.
You still think it's too early?
It's February still. I mean,
yeah, but the fish don't know a calendar. They don't have.
I understand
Farrah Fawcett on the wall with a whole bunch of numbers over her belly, telling what day, what month, and year it is.
Oh, you really reached back for that memory, didn't you?
I didn't have to reach that far. I just, never mind.
No, but, I mean, it's still photo period and water temperature, and all that's still going to play a role.
Photo period?
Daylight hours.
Oh, okay.
You know, daylight hours and nighttime hours. That plays a huge role.
Did you get that?
It took me a moment, yeah.
Okay.
But that's why Robert's here, is to get us grounded and get us focused.
And to keep us in
and
the
talk
photo
about
period.
Fishing, right.
Yeah, keep us in the photo period of the moment.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
That plays a huge role with all spawning of things and life in general. It doesn't matter if you're aquatic or land, you know. Daylight and nighttime has a huge role with how you sustain life.
Okay. But to me, the photo period didn't change much, or in other words, the duration of daylight. And all of a sudden, we got a lot of glass minnows in the harbor. We got tons of fish moving up. The fishing is getting better, 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 better. And the week before that, there wasn't much. So
right.
Now that was a temperature influence, I'm thinking.
Absolutely. Temperature does play a role into it. I'm not saying it's not, but I think that this is a short-lived moment.
Okay.
I think if we get another, because usually we do get one more good cold snap in February, and that's when it gets to be the funky part with the fish will move in and then move right back out again because they just don't know where they want to be. But starting in March, that's when we think we're going to start to see that really stay around.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say if I'm going out around Boca Grande, Gasparilla, along the ICW, I'm going to take one of those crazy, silly jigs. I want pink and white. I want a silver teaser on it. If I'm up in Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, along the bar on the east side, I want a DOA tandem rig. I want the two jigs chasing each other, single line, double jigs on it. I'm going to want the tandem rigs for chasing. Out on the Alligator Creek Reef, I'm going to be going for those 5-inch storm paddle tails, looking for a cobia or possibly just a tiny jig for the sheephead and snappers with some shrimp meat on it. Getting down around up in Venice up there, I'm going to go back to spoons or the crazy jigs. I'm not sure, but I'm going to stay pink and white. These are the things that I'd want with me in the box, maybe along the Gulf a spoon or two, because I'll throw a bait out, let it out there, and then I like to play with the lure. I like to cast the lure, put that rod in the rod holder, flip the live liner on, and let it sit there while I throw a lure or something like that.
I agree with you on that part of it.
Okay, anything about the lures, the crazy jigs, the tandem rigs?
I'm not a big fan of the tandem jigs. I'm going to stick with just a single shad tail.
You're going to go the shad tail over the double curl tail.
Personally, yeah.
And I'm going to fish more. I'll catch more fish than you in the morning.
Okay. You probably will.
Yeah, well.
That's not surprising.
We were out that one time. I caught more fish than you last time we were out.
Yes, you did. You did the slam.
Yes, I got a slam. And you didn't. Yeah. All right. Just to wrap this up, rather scattered and unusual show here today. Sorry about that. We've been trying to cover the topics, but it was my fault. I messed it up. Robert will be back on track next week, and we will have a definitive show for you. Any last words or thoughts there, Robert?
We have a talk coming up here at the Common Grounds.
This is an awesome place here. We're right up by the Caddy Carts, the kindergarten place, in the yellow building, and the 26th of this month, call the store 941-625-3888 and reserve your seats. The room holds about 60. We're capping it at 50. We've got 40-some people booked, so we've got a couple of seats left. You're going to hear me, Robert, Captain Kale, Captain Carl, maybe Josh Olive. We've got a really good show in store for you. It's pretty good talk. We've already given the talk one night at Luigi's. We're going to be doing one more at Luigi's, then we're up here at the Common Grounds on February 27th. So call the store, get your seats. only a couple left. Bass fishing, just to get in before we leave out of this, bass fishing's still going crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of post-spawn actually going on. The big females have already spawned off, and the males are sitting on beds in a lot of the Rotunda lakes and some of the Northport canals and ponds already.
So crankbaits, worms, shiners, what are we looking for?
Worms and shiners.
Worms and shiners.
Definitely. Crankbaits, I think, may be a little iffy. You want something that's going to work a little bit slower around those beds, and then the big females are actually gorging themselves and wanting shiners.
Well, if I'm fishing the beds, I want lizards. And speaking of a pair of lizards, this is Fishing Frank in the chair here. That's Robert in the chair across from me. And we have RJ, our producer, over there, trying to keep us online and really tried to keep me on track, but he didn't do it. So, you know, he's going to have to get a bigger whip next week. There we go. Oh, I love it when a plan comes together. We're Fishing Franks. Frank, Robert, and RJ. So, guys, anyway, have fun. We'll see you later.
All right, we're clear.
Well, I start at the beginning, and I start.